In 1624, Louis XIII gained a new and dynamic advisor, Cardinal Richelieu, who would be his chief minister until the year 1642. Richelieu quickly upped the ante. A French army crossed the Alps and occupied the Valtelline in autumn of 1624. The Duke of Savoy, meanwhile, laid siege to the city of Genoa in northern Italy, an important Spanish port, in 1625. Now, it should be pointed out that Spain actually managed this crisis of 1624-25 really rather well. In fact, 1625 saw a series of very impressive Spanish successes. Genoa held out against the siege by Savoy. Up in the Netherlands, the army of Flanders captured the key Dutch fortress of Breda, which is actually an event which is familiar, more familiar to a lot of people because it was commemorated in a famous painting by the Spanish artist Velázquez. Meanwhile, an Anglo-Dutch fleet, which had attacked the Spanish port of Cadiz, was humiliatingly defeated and sent back with the loss of over a third of its ships, a third of its 90 ships, in November of 1625. Nevertheless, for all the successes of 1625, there was an awkward fact which was becoming painfully clear to Spanish diplomats, and that is that the real reason for Spanish success was the fact that the French were domestically weak. In January of 1625, a major revolt broke out among the Huguenots of France. It was centered in southwestern France at the Atlantic fortress city of La Rochelle, and La Rochelle did not fall. The French crown was unable to reduce it until the fall of 1628, October of 1628. What this meant, therefore, was that between 1625 and 1628, France, of course, had to concentrate a lot of its strength inside its own boundaries and couldn't project it outside its boundaries. Therefore, by the peace treaty, which resolved or temporarily resolved the Valtelline issue in May of 1626, the Valtelline was again returned to Spain. But it was a kind of a hollow victory, because everybody could tell that if France could ever settle its domestic tensions and mobilize all of its forces, the Habsburg hold on the Valtelline, that last transalpine corridor, was doomed. That, then, it seems to me, summarizes the situation in Italy. I'd like now to turn to Germany, and actually the Baltic North, to review developments there. In early 1623, Emperor Ferdinand II convoked an assembly of the German princes at Regensburg. It was actually very thinly attended, a lot of people didn't want to go. And at this assembly, Ferdinand finally put some of his cards on the table. He proposed that Frederick V of the Palatinate should be deprived of all of his lands and of the electoral title as well, and that he proposed that both of these, the lands and the title, should now be transferred to the imperial ally, Maximilian of Bavaria. This created an enormous uproar. You'll recall that in the dark days of 1619, the emperor had been forced to make these promises to Bavaria in order to secure the support of the Catholic League in putting down the rebellion in Bohemia. Now Ferdinand was finding himself having to pay the piper. But whatever the legitimacy of Bavaria's claims for compensation, war, as we've seen over and over again, was extremely expensive. To change the imperial constitution was really too much for the Protestant member states of the empire, and in the end, Ferdinand II only felt able to grant Maximilian the electoral title for his own lifetime, and leaving the long-term fate of the Palatinate unresolved. Even this decision met with an enormous opposition, and ironically, Frederick V, who had been seen as an outlaw in the previous year, now began to regain support. It should be stressed that in the short run, Emperor Ferdinand's growing strength allowed him to ignore his critics, but in the long run, things would get more complicated. Thus far, the Protestants' main enemy had been the army of the Catholic League, headed by General Tilly. But in the spring of 1625, Ferdinand decided, on the heels of all these successes, that it was time for the emperor to become, in a sense, an emperor in truth and not just in name. And he decided for the first time to raise a major imperial field army of his own under the command of an enigmatic Czech nobleman named Albrecht von Wallenstein. Wallenstein is a very interesting character. He was born a Protestant, converted to Catholicism. He made his initial money by marrying a rich widow who conveniently died shortly thereafterwards. And he made a fortune speculating in the confiscated lands, which were confiscated after the Habsburg conquest of Bohemia. He was an incredibly resourceful businessman. He was a very successful entrepreneur, and he had created a very new kind of army. Wallenstein's army wasn't supported by crown taxes in the usual manner. Instead, it simply lived off the land by collecting so-called contributions. Contributions are basically forcible, systematic, organized plunder. Unit commanders would simply decide how much food, how much supplies their men required, and they would just order the local authorities to provide the food, the horses, whatever, or face devastation by the troops. There was this technique of burning off the four corners of each document, submitting it to the authorities and saying, if I don't get this by a certain amount of time, I'm going to burn all of your villages to the ground.